NBC Sports Radio. Weekends. Let's bring in the leisure men. Paul Pabst and Andrew Perloff. The show starts right now.
Welcome to the Leisure Men on NBC Sports Radio. I'm Paul Pabst. He's Andrew Perloff. He's joining me momentarily. Setting up shop here, getting ready for another good night of football. I think it's going to be a really fun night. Let's start off with the bad news, of course, as you just heard from Kate Delaney. The Washington Redskins lost their quarterback, Alex Smith, with a broken bone, broken bones in his leg. A lot of people are pointing out the coincidence that it happened with the same score, same type of injury, and almost to the date when it happened to Joe Theismann years ago with the tackle against the New York Giants and Lawrence Taylor. Really interesting night of football ahead. You know, the bad thing, especially for the Washington Redskins, though, they lose their quarterback. They were in this game the whole way. They were 6-3. Nobody really bought into them. Not myself, not my co-host, Andrew Perloff. No one's really on that Washington Redskin bandwagon as being a team to compete with this year. They needed this game. They were 6-3 going in. They were battling right with the Texans the whole way. Colt McCoy, the backup quarterback, who I consider one of those high-end backups, came in and put up a good fight against the Texans, but the Texans are hitting their stride. In the second half, the Texans only scored 6 points. The Redskins scored 14, but Texans found a way to hold them off. We're going to get to all the 1 o'clock games in a little bit, but I want to get you set for this. Is a really interesting time of year with the NFL because hope is starting to fade, more so than hope is starting to grow. If you look at some of these teams, such as the Redskins, even though they're 6-4, if you're a Redskins fan, you feel like, well, this isn't our year. Things could go wrong. Now, you do have that nugget of hope, which is what happened with the Philadelphia Eagles last year. When they lost their quarterback, star quarterback Carson Wentz, and brought in Nick Foles, they went on that run and won the Super Bowl. They were in much better position. I think they were 9-1 or 9-2 at the time. They were cooking. But the Buccaneers, a team that had hope this year, they're 3-7 now. The Tennessee Titans, which from week to week look like a team that, yeah, they're going to the playoffs too. Why would they even be close to the playoffs? They can put up 10 points against the Colts. They get smoked by the Colts, 38-10. And when I can't wait till Perloff gets here because I've been jawing about the Colts for about 2 weeks now, that the Colts are looking way better than expected, way better offensive line. The running back Marlon Mack is an unsung star in this league. And Andrew Luck is going to have his best season of his career when we thought he might not even play at all, and it could be a career for him 6 months ago. And the Colts have an easy stretch after the Titans. The Titans was their toughest game. The Lions, a team that goes in 3-6, now they're 4-6. Now, 4-6 sounds like that's not good. But in the NFC North, 4-6 means you're alive. Now, they got the Bears coming up soon, I think on Thanksgiving Day. But the Panthers, they still have hope. But at 6-4, the Panthers seem to be rolling on offense. Cam Newton, we'll talk about the play, but they went for it on fourth down. Their kicking game was terrible today. So they went with it, a fourth down play. Cam Newton tried to get it over the nose guard and just aired it out a little bit, or they win that game with a two-point conversion. Cowboys from week to week, you don't know. They won 22-19 over the Falcons. Falcons are on that almost done list. Not done, that's when you're mathematically eliminated. But the Falcons started slow. If you remember at the start of the season, they had a lot of defensive issues, mostly with the injuries. And they started to right the ship the past few weeks. Then they get beat on, it could have gone either way, cliche. But the Cowboys won 22-19. Cowboys now are 5-5. If they can get some help, if the Eagles happen to lose tonight, then they're right back in the thick of things. Then the games that are going on later tonight, which we're going to talk about all the games, but Vikings at Bears. Bears are 6-3 at home, giving 2.5 versus the Vikings. That means it's a pick 'em game. I think there's more pressure on the Vikings in this game than there is on the Bears. Vikings are 5-3-1 and came into this season everybody healthy. They, in theory, upgraded. They definitely spent more on a quarterback with Kirk Cousins, and they're 5-3-1. Now, that's not awful, and they could easily win this division if they got this win tonight. But now they're in that position where if they go 5-4 and the Bears jump up to 7-3, they're really, digging and scratching the last few weeks of the season. Same thing happened to the Packers the other day. The Packers are now 4-5-1, which leaves them in a position where they don't have to win out, but I think they could afford one more loss and still make a wild card. But maybe not even that. They may have to win out. Aaron Rodgers has done it before. So it's a really interesting time. The Monday night game is the opposite of that. Chiefs and Rams, it really doesn't matter who wins that game. Both of them are going to the playoffs. Both of them are playing for home field advantage throughout the playoffs. That's the main reason they want to win that game. The Rams are giving 3 at home, which, again, you always get 3 points at home, so that means that game's a pick 'em. And this is more a perception game. If the Rams or Chiefs, whichever team, happens to really, smoke the other team, which is unlikely, the over-under, by the way, in this game is 63.5. There aren't any over-unders. For those of you who don't know, the betting, I'm sure there's not too many of you who don't know at this juncture of your life, but the over-under is the total amount total point scored in the game for both teams combined. 63.5 is about as high as it gets. That's like a Big 12 game. For NFL, usually it's anywhere from 38 to about 52. This is the highest over-under. I got to check it that I can ever remember seeing in a regular season NFL game. So Chiefs versus Rams, nobody really expects a blowout either way. Such a close line. But if one of those teams happens to blow out the other, it's more of a perception game. Chiefs, let's say their defense pitches a great game against the Rams offense. You're like, oh, now the Chiefs have a defense to go along with Pat Mahomes and the crew. Vice versa, the Rams defense, which has given up a lot of runs this year. Not really great on the running game, okay on the passing game. A lot of talent, but hasn't really paid off with their defense. If the Rams happen to like put Patrick Mahomes in shackles a little bit, just check them a little bit and get a nice win, now you're like, okay, the Rams have both sides of the ball cooking. Going back to Bears-Vikings, as a Bear fan, I'll put my Bear fan hat on for just a second. My expectations for this season were solid. I still wasn't all in on Mitch Trubisky. He's having a very nice year. He's top 10 in quarterback rating, which, again, quarterback rating is kind of spotty, but he's definitely not in the lower 10, which as a Bears fan, you want above average quarterback play. We don't expect great quarterback play. Bears fans aren't greedy. We want a B-level quarterback. We are happy with a B-level quarterback and some running and some defense. But as a Bears fan, you're 6-3 at this point. You control your own destiny in the NFC North, and you get another win versus the Vikings. You get one later in the season. You pick up a win on Thanksgiving Day versus the Lions. You're in cruise control to win the division. That said, the Bears seem like a team that got a lot of wins against some subpar opponents, and in the playoffs, they'll probably get exposed. Imagine if the first round of the playoffs, the Bears are at the Saints or at the Rams. It probably won't work out too well. All right, let's get to some of the other games before we bring in my man Andrew Perloff in just a couple minutes here. The college football weekend was more saucy than it initially appeared. Even the game that was expected to be the total blowout, Alabama facing the Citadel at home. Citadel's not getting a home game against Bama. At halftime, that game was 10-10. It was unbelievable. Here's what happened there. The Citadel, Air Force, Navy, Army all run that 1920s, 1940s option-style football that's really hard to prepare for. And the Citadel, using short runs and protecting the football, had it a 10-10 game at halftime. I hope whoever is the sports information director at the Citadel took a picture of the scoreboard when it was 10-10 at half, because that was pretty juicy to see with Bama. Run through a few more games. Clemson, 35-6 over Duke, no problem. Notre Dame, 36-3 over Syracuse. This is bigger than it appears because Syracuse had a really good season. Syracuse becoming one of those spoiler teams. And the game was neutral site. You thought if Syracuse had a chance, this was it. But Ian Book, the quarterback of Notre Dame, not a household name, not even close. But when I watch him, he's a guy who doesn't make mistakes. He's not the best athlete on the field. They've had better athletes in the past at that position. But he is not throwing interceptions. He's really keeping the ball under control. And Dexter Williams and the rest of the running backs for Notre Dame are really having a great season. Defense is pretty good too. Michigan was tied at, really in a tight one with Indiana. Indiana's notorious for being in games and not closing games. They won 31-20. Georgia 66-27 over UMass. Those SEC teams like to take those mid-November easy games. They throw in a Citadel, throw in a UMass to kind of calm things down. Oklahoma 55-40 over Kansas. Oklahoma's cruising, but they're going to need some help to get in the playoffs. LSU 42-10 over Rice. Again, LSU, Rice, that's one of those SEC easy games. Washington State 69, Arizona 28. They're going to need a lot of help. West Virginia, who got them back into it, lost late in the game. They gave up 31 in the second half to Oklahoma State. West Virginia, donezo. We talked about being done. West Virginia, done. Ohio State 52. Ohio State's ranked 10th. They go to overtime at Maryland. Maryland is average football at best, and Ohio State had a good chance to lose that game. Maryland went for it in overtime on a two-point conversion. I thought it was the right play. Maryland, you can steal this and not give the ball back to Dwayne Haskins and Ohio State. They had a good shot at it. They're running. They just got all excited. The quarterback threw a bad pass, but he had an open man in the end zone. To me, that's almost like a loss for Ohio State. They may sit right at 10 in the rankings, maybe go up to 9 because of West Virginia. But Ohio State has had those games this year. The loss to Purdue, the barely win over Nebraska, the barely win over Maryland, that's basically like a high-end loss. It's really bad for Ohio State, and it's giving the committee a reason to keep them out of it. So a lot going on tonight. Also, we're going to take your calls all night, 855-323-4NBC. talk about the NBA drama that went on this week. We're going to talk a little about Perloff and I were out in Los Angeles. We're going to talk about LA food, which is good, bad, and sometimes very ugly. Also, Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving tips from Leisureman, and we're going to discuss the best time zone to be a sports fan. So all that coming up tonight. And later, the return of the Leisureman couch. That's where you send in. Go to @TheLeisureman on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter and send in your life issues. Sports, food, beer, women, money, clothes, hygiene, whatever you got. You send us on Twitter your life issues, and we will solve them in 11 minutes. That's the length of a segment, or less. Guaranteed. And here's the guarantee. If we don't solve your life issue, you get those 11 minutes of your life back. I don't know how, but Josh, our producer, said we could pull that off. Coming up next, we'll get to all the early games, run through each one, and declare who's done and still who's on life support. Stick around. We're the Leisureman, NBC Sports Radio.
Back on the Leisureman, Perloff and Paps. I'm Andrew Perloff. He's Paul Paps. I'm having sort of a tough day with my teams, NFL-wise. I don't really want to get into it too much. But, Paul, I'll tell you one way that you can guarantee you'll have a good day, and that's Guinness.
Yeah, you know, Andrew, if you notice the tone of my voice, I'm a little happier, a little chippier. I have in my hands, and I'm chilling this as we speak for after the Leisureman radio show, Guinness Open Gate Brewery and Barrel House has partnered with Billet Bourbon, which is killer bourbon, by the way, to make stout, a special edition stout aged in Bullet Bourbon Barrel. Say that four times fast.
It's Bullet Bourbon Barrel.
It's fantastic. It's like a darker, deeper tone of the traditional Guinness stout. It's fantastic. You can get a four-pack of bottles. You got to go look in your local package store, your local store, wherever you get your beer, wherever beer is served, or your local pub, see if they have it on tap. It's available for a limited time nationally beginning November right now. You know, it's best if in a little type of snifter glass, which I don't even know exactly what that is, but I think that's almost like a little baby goblet. But Guinness barrel-aged stout is with Bullet Bourbon. Grab it now. Try that. Try all the different things that Guinness have to offer at your local pub, your local store. Grab it. Get ready for Thanksgiving. Don't be one of those guys who goes out shopping like Wednesday night at 9 p.m. and gets like 30-pack of some bull for Thanksgiving. That's terrible. That's weak. You'd be embarrassed. Get some Guinness. Get ready for Thanksgiving, Perloff.
Absolutely, absolutely. I could definitely – I need a party because my Bengals are depressing me, Paul. The Cincinnati Bengals, my second favorite team in the NFL.
Right.
No longer, by the way. If you're playing – let me just ask you a theoretical football question. You're an NFL defense. You have presumably NFL defense players. You know the other team is not going to throw the ball more than 8 yards down the field because after 60 plays, they have not done it once. Don't you move – 8 guys up in the box, 9 guys up in the box, and do something. How can you win running your quarterback 27 times, Lamar Jackson, in the NFL, in today's NFL? It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I need to be the defensive coordinator for the Bengals. Am I right, formula-wise?
You're right, because I watched that game, and if you don't need to know a whole lot about football to know that Lamar Jackson making his first start against the Cincinnati Bengals is going to lean towards his legs over his arm because it's safer for him. I mean, that's the most obvious thing in the world. When I heard that Lamar Jackson was having a good early start, I turned that game on. I'm like, well, of course he is. He's going to run first like he did, you know, against the tougher teams when he was back at Louisville. And, you know, he ran 27 times today. He only passed 19 times. You're exactly right. Put two spies on him. Put two safeties up on the line and just say chase him down and keep him from running because he wasn't a terrible passer today, but he passed off the run even back there. He wasn't dropping back and dropping them in. He was rolling right and left and finding guys on crossing patterns. They ran for 265 yards and 5 yards of rush today. There was really, yeah, you got to do something about it. You had to bring extra people up, and the Bengals never did.
It's unbelievable. Well, they fired their defensive coordinator last week. They kept up their pace. They're going to be the worst defense in the history of the NFL, most yards allowed. Now, luckily for Lamar Jackson, if he stays in the starting lineup, he plays the 31st ranked defense next week. They're a little higher than that. Oakland, who was also one of the bad defenses. So Lamar Jackson is going to have a nice 2-game run. But this is kind of like a do or die for the Bengals, and they certainly died. I'm curious. So he's a first round pick. Are you worried if you're the Ravens that my quarterback ran 27 times and he's not a huge guy?
Well, I always knew that Lamar Jackson, I watched him a lot in college, is a project in the pros. He can throw the ball deep, especially. He's got a big, strong arm. But he is such a run-first guy. And this is the era of scramble, not run, and keep plays alive. And if he could learn how to do that, which Robert Griffin kind of did, but he got hurt before he had a chance to, I go back to Randall Cunningham. When Randall Cunningham came in out of UNLV, he could only run and he was a liability as a passer. And it took like 3 years, but he became everything. And if he can use that model where run to get your wide receivers open, but don't run downfield every time and pull it down, because you can't survive in this league. He's too thin. We've met him in person. There's just no way.
Yeah. No, he did do a nice job on sort of the RPO and throwing the ball. I think he could throw. I was actually telling the Ravens, you should open it up. Let him throw the ball downfield and see what he can do. But, you know, it's interesting. That's the game with mobile quarterbacks, right? You need to adjust. Like Tim Tebow started out running the ball every time. He never could take the next step.
But the problem is, if you're the Ravens, what else are you doing? That's why you took him that high, is to make him your quarterback. You didn't put him in to be the next Antoine Randall-L, where you switch him out to wide receiver. All right, let's get to some other games, Perloff. I was talking earlier about teams that feel like they're done. And the Atlanta Falcons at 4-6, they had some life the past 3 weeks. But now at 4-6, the odds are just so high against them, especially in that division. There's still an opening. But the Dallas Cowboys now have life again at 5-5. They ran the ball pretty well. They passed the ball pretty well. They played really good defense, which they're leading with their defense these days. Which do you think is more likely, the Cowboys make the playoffs or the Falcons miss? Or is it a bowl?
Oh, Falcons are done. I mean, the poor Atlanta, they lost these close last-second games early in the season. Then they lost too many defensive players. They're not quite mathematically done, but statistically it's not happening. Cowboys are really interesting because now that Alex Smith is out for the year, I think that – and the Eagles
right. have Yeah, if really the Eagles don't pull this off.
Yeah. I honestly think the Cowboys are right there and have a really good chance. I don't have the schedules in front of me, Paul, but I assume there's going to be I know there's Redskins-Eagles games. There's going to be some Week 17 game for the division. Don't you feel that way?
Absolutely. That's what it feels like, because these it usually is that way in the NFC East. The other game I want to get to is Carolina versus Detroit. Now, if you didn't watch this game, you look at that like, wow, nice game by Detroit. The Carolina Panthers had this one, and Cam Newton missed it, and it's just that simple. Now, he had a really nice game. He had 3 touchdowns, 1 pick. Christian McCaffrey ran. They DJ Moore, who's becoming a star for Carolina at receiver, he had 157 yards receiving. Their defense wasn't bad. You know, Detroit wasn't great. They weren't bad, but Carolina kind of righted the ship and scored 12 points in the fourth quarter. Cam Newton had a 2-point conversion to go for, and they didn't want to let their kicker on the field because they just didn't trust him anymore. He missed a field goal and an extra point. Cam Newton had a guy right in the middle of the end zone and tried to just guide it over the defensive tackle, who was right over the nose, and he tried to guide it over him and guided it too high.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got to give Cam an option to run. It was a lot like that Mariota play in London against the Chargers, where you have a mobile quarterback and you just drop him out and you're not rolling on. Everyone knows to roll at the goal line, right? That's like
right.
basic NFL fan 101. Roll him out. Or sneak, but that was the wrong play. It wasn't even close, too. You know, it's funny. It wasn't like he just missed him. He really rocketed way over his head. So, you know, with the kicker situation, what was your call before? I don't know if you tweeted or anything. Would you have gone for it, or would you have kicked the extra point?
That's a tough one, because I think you're the better team. I probably would have played for overtime there, because you are the better team, and you let your talent play out over more than one play. There's other teams. Like when Maryland went for 2 against Ohio State, it made sense. Like, you have an opportunity to get 2.5 yards to beat Ohio State. You got to take that opportunity, because it's probably 60% that you're going to make that play. And if you give Ohio State a fresh overtime, you could get housed.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. That's such a good analogy, Paul. But you're right. I thought Carolina was the better player. They did have some issues with the kicker. I did tweet that it was a mistake to go for it, but I waited till after they missed. I was smart.
Good call. Hey, next, I want to talk about my Indianapolis Colts and run through all the 1 o'clock games. You rested? You ready?
I'm ready to go, buddy.
Let's do it, Perloff, the Leisureman, right after the break on NBC Sports Radio. Back on NBC Sports Radio on a Sunday night, I'm Paul Papps. He's Andrew Perloff. We are the Leisureman, your favorite radio show on all of NBC Sports Radio. On for what? When we start this show, like 1997, back in late 97, Perloff?
Yeah, right around when Mike and the Mad Dog got started, I think. I can't remember exactly.
Dog get the book. Hey, by the way, we're going to get to all the late football games, all the early football games. We're going to get to everything. But you and I took the red eye home from LA the other day, and I don't know how other people do it. Now, I don't do it a lot. I've probably taken 4 red eye flights in my life. Everyone knows the red eye. You get on a plane and the West Coast, like at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, and you wake up on the East Coast. How do you deal with it, Perloff?
I generally, until this weekend, did not deal with it. I made a no red eye policy about 6 years ago.
Right.
I broke it because I wanted to play basketball on Saturday morning, and
right.
I will never do it again. It's my last one.
It's
I will never have to deal with it. It's the worst. It's the worst thing in the world.
5-hour flight home from Los Angeles. You know, I do it, you know, to see my family, and I get on a flight. We got on a flight about 10:45 p.m. and it's about a 5.5-hour flight. We breezed. I think we made it in 5 hours. Really got to JFK fast. I slept about 3.5 of the 5 hours, which isn't even that bad. I got home, had breakfast. I took my first nap of the day at 10:15 a.m. I took my second nap of the day at about 2:30, and then I end up going to bed around 9:45 in the middle of a football game and sleeping 10 hours. Is that about your story?
So I went to bed at like 1 Eastern. I played basketball, which is a horrible mistake. The fact that I didn't come out with a major injury is amazing. But I yelled at everybody, to almost got in a fight.
Oh, yeah. Deal. Very snappy.
Business as usual. I was so snappy. Even today, I've been a mess. And then I slept from 1 to 4. My wife actually had to go out, so she's like, you're watching the kids. So I had to be up from 5 to 9:30 or so, and it was barely up. Then I slept the full night, but I'm still a little off balance. Why did we do it? Like,
I don't
remember,
know.
What were we thinking? I convinced each other. That was the bad part.
Trying to be good husbands, good dads, and get home, and then we just end up being zombies around our family. I don't think they really liked what they got yesterday. Here's the only time I would recommend Leisureman Red Eye recommendation. Let's say you want to go to Europe for a quick trip, and you're trying to buy yourself as many hours as you can. So let's say you're going to go, for hypothetically, to Guinness in Ireland, a Guinness Bro Tour, yeah, which I've done before. Last year, we left on a Thursday evening at 7. We landed in Dublin at 7 a.m., but we got a full night's sleep because it's like a 7-hour flight. You can get a good amount of sleep. Like in L.A. to New York, you get like 3 or 4 hours. You know, East Coast or Midwest to Dublin or London, you're going to get 6 hours sleep if you put your mind to it and with proper medication. And then you get all day Friday, all day Saturday, and most of Sunday, and then you fly back and make up the hours on the way back. So I would say go into Eastern Europe, Western Europe, take that red eye to pick up a few extra hours.
Yeah, you usually do that for Dublin, right?
Yes.
I thought you left at night. Yeah, it feels, going overseas feels right at night, but
right,
you're going to get all screwed up time-wise anyway. From L.A., I don't think it's necessary anymore.
Let's get to what I think is the underrated game of the weekend. The Indianapolis Colts, my Colts, 38-10 over the Titans. Titans seem to be right in the ship the past few weeks. People are jumping on the bandwagon. Marcus Mariota, you know, really starting to hit his stride, and then it all goes south today, and the Colts just wax them 38-10. Andrew Luck, 23 of 29, 297, 3 touchdowns, and no interceptions. Almost a perfect quarterback rating. What do you think? And by the way, the Colts, Marlon Mack, good young running back. T.Y. Hilton, healthy again, catches 9 balls for 155. They've got other help on offense. Their defense, not a lot of household names, but they're just playing okay, a little above average, and doing the job.
They have great young defensive players. GM Chris Ballard's doing an amazing job. Paul, I think you should be really excited about this bandwagon, but next year probably.
Sure.
I'm not sure they can do. They really, like, because the young guys are doing great. Now, it is interesting to me the way the NFL sets up the schedule where the Colts and Titans play 13 times a year, which I don't know why they're on every week. Doesn't it feel like those AFC South teams are always matching up? Because their uniforms are all almost exactly the same.
They all match.
They're all about 5-5, 4-5. They totally are a bunch of the same team. But you're right, Mariota looked terrible today. I don't know if that was the Colts or that's Mariota. I was excited about this game, too. A lot of like inside sharp guys said this is the game to watch. Mm-hmm. Then it was kind of a blowout.
Yeah, it's weird because I think the Colts are going to win their next two games. They got Miami and Jacksonville, but then they have Houston, Dallas, New York Giants, and Tennessee. They could come back to earth, but I think they're going to get 8 wins this year. And if you look at where you thought Andrew Luck was 4 months ago, you got to be completely happy if you're a Colts fan.
Oh, yeah, you got to be thrilled. Although, you never know with Jacksonville. Those AFC South teams, forget records. They all, like, one of them has dominance over the other. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I think the Jags are tough on the Colts. I can't remember which way it is. So I wouldn't count any. And the Jags, by the way, they have every reason to be upset.
Oh, you want to get to that game?
Oh, my God. If you could explain how they lost that game to me and how the announcers made it even worse by not knowing which way the flag went on the key play in the game in the last minute and made it seem like the Jaguars had won the whole thing when they hadn't. The Steelers, I honestly can't wrap my head around where they got those 20 points.
I was watching most of that game. I watched quite a bit of the first half, and Jacksonville was crushing the Steelers. I mean, they were hitting Roethlisberger. They were forcing him into bad passes. He was making incompletions all day. He had 3 interceptions, Roethlisberger. James Conner did nothing. And by the way, James Conner had a terrible game. He ran for 25 yards. He also topped dropped a fourth down pass in the fourth quarter and a touchdown pass in the fourth quarter. Now, the Steelers won, so people will forget about it. But James Conner, the running back, he better get his you-know-what together because he was a disaster today and was a detriment to his team. Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster were great as always. And Blake Bortles, he didn't need to do much. This reminded me of Jacksonville last year where Leonard Fournette ran for 95 yards, about 3.5 yards a carry, which is what his career average is. Yeah. Blake Bortles did nothing, and the defense was crushing them the entire game until a bunch of penalties and calls late went just against them.
Absolutely. They got three picks on Ben. Remember Jalen Ramsey had said Ben was average during the offseason, then he got an interception. It looked like just every narrative was going Jacksonville's way. And you're right about Conner. My Twitter feed blew up with, oh, Le'Veon Bell would have caught that. Lot of that.
Yeah, you would have caught that touchdown pass. He had the ball on a little, like one of those swing patterns for where the running back goes up, and he upped it. He was wide open. He put the ball into his breadbasket, and just boom. And he also had a fourth down drop earlier that probably won't get noticed as much. You know, again, if you win, those plays get pushed back on the national landscape.
Totally. You know, the Steelers have kind of a tough schedule ahead, but they could be in line for a home field playoff game, like second-round playoff game. So that's a huge win for them. I mean, they're going to win the AFC North anyway, but they're in positioning. I was watching them, and I was thinking, wait, were we saying this is a Super Bowl team like two weeks ago? Now, I did not see a Super Bowl team out there, but they come away with a W, I guess, says something good.
Yeah, I think with the Steelers, you got the W. You can shake it off as just one of those awful games where the Jaguars played like the Jaguars defense for two quarters this entire season, and you happen to find those two quarters. We're going to talk more about the Jaguars because there's some stories out there about them looking to trade people, which is that's getting ugly real fast. Last game before break, New York Giants 38-35 over the Buccaneers. The Giants were rolling in this one, but found a way to let Jameis Winston throw a couple touchdown passes late. Ryan Fitzpatrick, he blew. He was 0 touchdowns, 3 picks. They were getting smoked the whole game. Eli almost gave it up late. Not Eli, but the defense, I should say. Saquon Barkley, probably his best game of the year. 27 carries for Saquon, 142, 2 touchdowns. Odell Beckham had another 74-yard game with a touchdown. The offense looks not really good, but good for the Giants. The defense looks spotty. And, of course, now the Giants are going to take their 3-7 record and probably get it up to 7-7 in a few weeks.
It is absolutely amazing that Eli Manning looked, 17-18 on the game. He's going to end up having a career year. And are they going to face the same question at the end of the season, Paul?
Yes.
Do we bring him back?
Because he's not that old. He's not as old as other quarterbacks that are, there's MVPs that are older than him. There's going to be, when Drew Brees picks up his MVP this year, he'll be older than Eli. And last year, the MVP was Brady. He's older than Eli. So if Eli plays above average, do you just drop him and then start anew? I mean, they've been dealing with this for 2 years now. They're going to deal with it again if he goes on a run.
It's incredible, too. Because, first of all, let's just throw out passing numbers for this year. They're all so silly.
Right.
But Eli, he's throwing the ball. When he has time, he's throwing the ball as well as, Eli ever has. The problem is he's the wrong quarterback if you're under any kind of pressure. And today, okay, so let me just tell you, his completion percentage this year is now at 68%.
Oh.
His career high is 63.1%. His ratings at 92.7. He just had one season in his career better than that. And his yards, I think, are at the highest that they've ever been per game. He's done, in other words.
Yeah, of course he's going to go on a run. All right, we're going to talk about the other 1 o'clock games and do how was your weekend. Stick around. Your calls as well. The Leisureman, NBC Sports Radio.
Back on The Leisureman, I'm Andrew Perloff. He's Paul Papps. Very, very tough day for Washington Redskins fans. Suffer a close loss to the Texans, more importantly. Lose their quarterback, Alex Smith, to an injury that's being compared to Joe Theismann's injury way back in the day against, of course, Lawrence Taylor. It's funny, Paul, they originally said it was an ankle injury.
Right.
And then it became very clear that his leg was broken. Alex Smith signed for the big money in Washington. They're really he's the right quarterback for this team. They're kind of conservative. They don't need a downfield guy. This kills them because they really had the division where they wanted. If they could have come away with a win today, they would have been in great shape.
You know, the other thing I noticed about this is I wasn't watching when he went down. I saw on social media they went down. I was watching the red zone, but I didn't see the play. And then they brought it back, and I didn't watch it by choice. And then I was watching Andrew Siciliano, host of The Red Zone on DirecTV, and he said, we've shown it enough. That'll be good if you want to see it. I'm sure there's a lot of other places for you to see it. And they didn't run it again after the first replay on DirecTV's Red Zone. And then I've spent the past about few hours of my life trying to avoid it on social media, and it's tough because sometimes when you're scrolling on social media, videos just start playing that you don't even want to activate. And even now, I'm on a sports website, and the play just popped up on the screen on the right side of the scoreboard, and I had to purposely look away to not see it. So these days, if there's a gruesome injury, and I'm not really in the mood to see them, I don't know why. It doesn't. I don't need to see it. You tell me he's got two broken bones in his leg, I'm going to trust you. And I really, you almost have to fight to not see these kind of videos.
Oh, absolutely. You're right. I was on a site, too, that it popped up. I was actually watching live, and I tell you, you didn't see it at all. You just thought it was a normal injury.
Right.
In fact, I thought he was going to get right back up. You know who's on fire, by the way? J.J. Watt is just, he's a menace to the offense. He was part of that play. I mean, basically, the Texans' defense is everything we expected. The Texans are not, it's funny, they're not a great team.
No.
But they're finding a way to win. Deshaun Watson made a couple bad mistakes today. I kind of like them, though. They're kind of fun to root for. That whole AFC South, I think the Leisureman should definitely pick up the AFC South as our division because no one else is doing that.
No one.
We like
that.
Those teams, right?
You know what the weird thing is? Deshaun Watson is not hitting his stride. You've been waiting all season for him to go on a run of games like he did as a rookie, and he's not bad. He's a good scrambler. He's very tough, probably too tough for his own good because he takes a lot of hits, but he is not having many breakout games, and he's not bad. He's just not advancing, I guess.
Absolutely. But the other day I looked at his numbers and they were surprisingly good. He's got 100 passer rating. He has, until today, he didn't throw picks. He threw two meaningful picks today. No, I totally agree though. He's nothing like what we expected last year. But, you know, they're right there, and I feel like J.J. Watt, the comeback player of the year race is like the best race of all the races. Because you got Adrian Peterson, Andrew Luck, and J.J. Watt just sitting there. And some other guys too. Aaron Rodgers is a comeback player, although he's not playing as well. So that's really better than the MVP race to me. Paul, there's a hot take.
All right, that's real saucy. All right, one thing before we wrap up the hour, I want to ask you, because you're a guy who loves food, as we all do. You know, when you read those Yelp reviews and other type of reviews, sometimes you see a restaurant get dinged for being not really nice inside and like bad decor or bad, not that clean or kind of divey, or it gets of reviews for bad service, but gets great reviews for food. Does bad service or bad decor / cleanliness, how much does that turn you off? Now, before I get to your answer, I went to a diner today, and this place was a divey little mom-and-pop diner in the middle of Charlestown, Rhode Island, and it was fantastic. I mean, on the outside, the place looked like it needed a paint job, needed some yard work. Inside, there was about 5 tables, and the decor looked like 1977. The food was an A+, Perloff.
Nice. So now let me ask you, there's a distinction between like greasy spoon, but still hygienic. Did
right.
it feel hygienic to you?
It didn't feel dirty. It just felt dated. So I know there's a big difference there. It's the old Red Mill Diner in Charlestown, Rhode Island. A stunner food-wise.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Corollary question. Where do you stand on food trucks?
Oh,
that can't be cleaner than restaurants. So you basically are not too uppity about, you know, hygiene then, because food trucks can't by definition be super healthy and clean.
I know, because they probably don't get checked as much, and you know, just by the nature of all the fumes and stuff, there's
no sink in them.
They probably have something.
Well, how, I don't understand, how can you have a running sink in a truck? Think about
it. But going back to this though, which bothers you more though, a place is like dated and old and bad decor, does that bother you at all, or does just bad service bother you?
Definitely bad service is worse. Dated and old is fine. I mean, some great places are dated and old. Aren't like Peter Luger Steakhouse. Is that dated and old?
Yeah, but it's clean and nice, but just very 70s, 80s decor.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I prefer that. Are you kidding me? I'm a big 70s decor guy. Bad service is bad. What about, what about like something that you question the hygiene, like real? What do you do with that? Are you a guy who gets bugged by that?
Sometimes if a place looks like a real dive where there's wires hanging out and there's like boxes of food strewn in about where there should be tables and chairs. And I look, I'm like, boy, you didn't put any effort to clean this up. But then sometimes those places are so damn good food wise. You're like, well, this must be one of those things where it's like, he's a genius or she's a genius and can't focus on cleaning up their around them. They're just focused on giving out the food.
I like that.
That's how I think I justify it.
I like that. By the way, I've had this weird craving, you know, we ate sushi, like, 4 out of our last 7 meals. So last night it was dinner time, Paul, and I was like, wait, should I eat sushi again? Like, my body wants sushi. And we hit the order of the century on, I believe it was Friday night, you and I, the Langostino lobster roll at Iori Sushi in Marina Del Rey, California.
Yeah, let's give a shout out. Iori Sushi, I-R-O-R-I Sushi in Marina Del Rey. It looks pretty plain. It's kind of in one of those strip malls, maybe a high-end strip mall in Marina Del Rey. Sushi was a 10. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, this was great too. They had all this amazing lobster on top of the rolls. It was great.
What's your policy on, and I know your policy, but sometimes you see another couple or people near you at a table and you see what they ordered and you're like, ooh, that looks awesome. Do you do the walk up or the tap on the shoulder? Hey, what'd you get? I think it's fine to do that.
Totally. People appreciate it. Like when you get it, it's a good thing. That's how we found that lobster dish. That was amazing.
All right. So don't be afraid at a restaurant. If you see another group of people order something and you think you like it, do a walk up and say, ooh, that looks good. What'd you get? People want to show off their orders, what we're saying on Leisureman.
Absolutely, dude. Don't go too far, though.
Let's bring in the Leisureman, Paul Pabst and Andrew Perloff. The show starts right now.
Hour two of the Leisureman. I'm Andrew Perloff. He's Paul Pabst. Paul, something very exciting is happening on NBC right now. They did the obligatory quarterbacks walking into the facility shot. Chicago Bears, Mitchell Trubisky wearing a dapper suit. Kirk Cousins also looking very nice. It's happening. Your Chicago Bears, Mitchell Trubisky, are in the national spotlight for everyone to break down for better or worse. Is it going to be better or worse tonight, Paul?
I think they're going to pull this one off. I think the Vikings need it more than the Bears. But the Bears, you know, so far, everything's going very well for them. The backfield, the quarterback play is improving. And everyone who was complaining last year that they traded up so much to get Mitch Trubisky is like, well, this might be the best quarterback we've ever had at this point in his career. If you look at it, they haven't had a quarterback this promising since young Jim McMahon. And then even the Khalil Mack trade, even though he's been on the shelf with the ankle injury, they traded for him in theory at the right time where they could afford him, and Mitch Trubisky, they don't have to pay him yet. So they've kind of like fast-forwarded this franchise from a year and a half ago being kind of embarrassing to really competitive, but not, I don't think, Super Bowl threatening. Is that fair to say?
Very fair to say. The schedule has been like remarkably easy. It seems like the Jets, the Bills, the Cardinals, basically the top teams that will be in the draft. So, you don't know for sure. But you're right. I think Minnesota is pretty dangerous, though, Paul. They're a very good team. They're starting to play a little bit like last year's team on defense. So I'm not as confident as you are. But I think they're both pretty good teams. I think they'll both be playoff teams. Okay,
I think you just set me up there to pick the Bears and then just rained all over my parade.
No. I totally kind of agree with everything you said. And I do agree Trubisky's probably the most promising young QB they've had in a long time. Other 4 o'clock games, Arizona and Oakland are in a battle. The Cardinals up 21-20, less than 2 minutes to go. The Saints are just demolishing the Eagles, 45-7. Now, Drew Brees, Paul, has not had his normal efficient day. He was 21 for 29, 352, 4 TDs. I think that's below his season career percentage. The dude is completely like 90% of his passes. He's unbelievable. And yeah, in the last 4 o'clock game, Denver just got the ball back with a minute 50 left on their own 8-yard line, down 22-20 against the red hot Los Angeles Chargers. Interesting thing about that game is the whole crowd is wearing orange. It is a total road game for the Chargers, but I guess they're 7-1 in that stadium over the last whatever number of games. So I guess it doesn't matter.
Okay, I had a thought. I'm going to throw it out there now before we get back to those 4 o'clock, the later games, which are going on right now. Remember how everyone thinks that the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to London and everyone expects it and that they're going to move them? Their owner's from there. He's their guy. Yeah. Okay, if not the Jaguars, then the Chargers, because the Chargers have no home in Los Angeles. And the Chargers, unless they're going back to San Diego, which I think they should go back to San Diego, I think people in San Diego would like it. But if there's not a home there and not a deal there, move the Chargers to London. Why not? They're basically in a weird holding pattern of being the second best team and not even really close to the Rams in popularity, in tradition, in anything. They are the most movable team in the NFL right now. Your thoughts?
I like your logic.
Wow.
I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
Because there is a lot of value just being the second team in LA. I think that makes them, if you look at the like Fortune or Forbes lists of value, that puts them pretty high up there. So I'm not sure that it matters to them. I know it's not ideal, but they've overcome. They don't really seem to have a problem with this this thing playing in front of the opposing crowds. They're almost unbeatable at home. They're very, very good. So I hear you. The other thing, too, is like they're a West Coast team, so their fans, they're so far away from – does that matter? They're so far from London. At least Jacksonville's on the East Coast. Am I being totally small picture there?
I think you give them an opportunity. Honestly, if I were the NFL, I would say, look, this isn't going to work out. You guys can go back to San Diego. We'll make it friendly for you. We'll help you have that team down in San Diego. Or you're just going to have to move to London and start with a new name and new everything. And that's it, because they got such an uphill battle in Los Angeles. There's not that many sports fans to go around. They don't have the history of even the California Angels. All right, and you know what? Another thing about the Chargers, they're 7-2 right now. Looks like they're going to go to 8-2. I still get worried that they're going to pull a December Chargers move where they lose two of three games that they should win.
Wow. By the way, they just had a crazy call in that Denver Chargers game where they called a push-off after like a 10-minute conference. They called would have been a game-deciding call against the Broncos. But I totally agree with you. Getting off track here. By the way, the Chargers, do you still have that stigma that they're going to find a way to blow it, like a kicking error or something?
Absolutely. Yeah. The past 12 years, they've done this. They've done it back to, you know, we were talking the other day, we were out in L.A., and one of our production people said, who's the quarterback who would have benefited the most or something from winning a Super Bowl? And I threw out Dan Fouts' name, because Dan Fouts is kind of a semi-legendary pro quarterback because his look, his style, and how cool the Chargers were back in the late 70s and 80s. But you give Dan Fouts a ring, all of a sudden you have to talk about him as one of the more important, impactful quarterbacks, because they were the pass-first team before Dan Marino, and he was the pass-first guy before Dan Marino. And Dan Fouts is going to be not remembered in 50 years. He won't.
No.
No offense. And he will be on me, but I'll be long gone by that time. But if he had one ring, all of a sudden Dan Fouts has history.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting about the way a ring impacts you, because we're talking about Eli, we're talking about Matt Ryan not getting that ring.
Right.
It's totally a game changer. By the way, the Broncos just drove the ball down to the Chargers about 15-yard line. There's 3 seconds left. They have a chance. Brandon McManus for a game-winning field goal. So that'd be interesting. By the way, we just said the Chargers were 8-2, Paulie. Is that on us?
Yeah. Well, I said they're about to go because they look like they
possibly
were.
They were. They had them pinned.
Okay, let me set the scene. There's 3 seconds left, and the Chargers are up 22-20 on the Denver Broncos. The Broncos have a 2nd and 10. All they need is a field goal, probably about a 42-yarder, maybe a little longer than that, for a win. Who you got right now? You got to put a week's pay on the Chargers or the Broncos?
I got the Chargers because he missed the same field goal last week against 2 weeks ago against the Texans. They probably called a timeout. Is there a timeout?
By the way, are you a timeout guy to freeze the kicker,
timeout,
or would you
do the
non-timeout for a thing?
Probably the timeout. I probably go the timeout. I feel like it always goes against you. Like, you call the timeout and he misses it, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, you give him an extra chance. So it would not work out, but I'd probably go timeout. What about
you? Okay, what just happened here is the Denver Broncos kicked the field goal, appeared to win it, but the Chargers coach, with 1 second left on the play clock, did call timeout. So if he didn't call timeout, they lose the game. Now, they have one more timeout left, the Chargers. Do you do the double freeze timeout or let this one play out and let the Broncos kick it?
I just do one timeout. You're tempting field goal fate if you do double freeze.
With the double freeze.
I think he looks a little nervous. Am I crazy?
I think Case Keenum looks like he's about to throw up. I just saw Case on the sidelines. He looks like he's going to boot.
Yeah, oh my God, you're right. He's about to lose it.
All right. But, I mean, it's got to be the worst thing to be a hardworking football player. And leave your livelihood in the hands of a non-football player. I know he's a kicker and he's there, but it's brutal.
That is brutal. So this one is good. The Broncos win 23-22. Man, that was as close a game as you're going to have. By the way, remember last week on Sunday Ticket, or 2 weeks ago, there were no close games? It feels like every game came down to the last minute today. Am I missing something? I feel like, you know, you look at Atlanta, Dallas, you look at Carolina, Detroit, you look at this game. There are a lot of wild, wild finishes.
Yeah, we've had some bad ones early. Like, maybe September was not that juicy and October wasn't that juicy. It's been a good month. The one game we haven't talked about, and it's because it's basically irrelevant, is the Oakland Raiders versus the Arizona Cardinals. Final score, Oakland Raiders 23, Arizona Cardinals 21. Like you, America.
Another one.
Another close one. just to give you the stats, Josh Rosen was 9 of 20 with 3 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. David Johnson had a great game for the Arizona Cardinals. But the Raiders, now 2-8. Derek Carr with a nice game, 192 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. and a bunch of guys you had never heard about running the ball and catching the ball for the Raiders, because I'm looking at the names, and their names on this list I've never heard before in my life, and all I do is watch football.
Well, you know, okay, we know Doug Martin, former Buck. We know DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard are like the backup running backs for life there. Who is Marcel Aitman, who had four catches for 50 yards?
I don't know. I'm sure he's a nice gentleman. He probably works out hard, but we don't know who he is. I know more guys on the Cardinals.
He's 6'4 out of Oklahoma State, seventh round pick. By the way, Seth Roberts also has their second weapon. Seth Roberts, I think of any NFL player, he's had some big plays in his career. I think he has the most sort of, he could be an attorney, Seth Roberts. Like, he's not like, that's not a football name. Like, hey, my buddy Seth from college. That's not a wide receiver, is it?
Yeah. And then the weird thing is, I'm looking at the standings for the number one draft pick. The San Francisco 49ers, the Oakland Raiders have the top two picks in the draft right now. I don't know what the tiebreaker is, but if the draft were today, it would be 49ers, Raiders for pick one and two in the draft. A team with a young-ish star quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo who's hurt, and a team that might be looking for a different quarterback, the Oakland Raiders. That's saucy.
Yeah, it does feel like the Raiders will try and trade Derek Carr. It just makes sense because John Gruden, you know, he said nice things about Carr, but I think he'll go that direction. You know, I'm looking at the other picks. Cardinals have one. Jets have one. Jaguars definitely take a quarterback, don't you think?
Jaguars, if they don't take a quarterback with the highest pick that they have, the GM should be fired at this juncture.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are starting to really lose games. Do they draft a quarterback? Oh, my gosh. That's the half our offseason is going to be spent discussing that. What do you think?
I would bet that the Bucs go new quarterback, new coach simultaneously because they can't trust either quarterback. Jameis is he giveth, he taketh away, and it's never going to get much better than it is, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Fitzmagic ran out today, and Jameis had a nice comeback effort. Giants taking quarterback. Problem is, Paul, you just look at the college rankings, just eyeballing without even studying it, it doesn't feel like there are a lot of, like NFL-ready quarterbacks playing the game right now. It's not like, remember that year we had Mariota Winston? We kind of knew the guys coming up. Maybe a Carson Wentz will sneak up, but is it possible that we won't have the QBs?
I keep an eye out for the return of Drew Lock in Missouri. I think people who got off the Drew Lock bandwagon will jump back on because he's a pure drop-back quarterback, and he might be the best of the field. He may not go top four or five, but like in the 8 to 15 range, you could see his name.
Oh, totally. We're assuming, too, Justin Herbert doesn't go pro. The Oregon quarterback. You laugh at that.
A lot of people, it's funny.
I read a lot of draft stuff. Everyone's like, it's legit. He's not going pro. He's staying at Oregon, and he's actually struggled a little bit. I don't know. Who stays? Why would you stay? Is he going to stay?
I would not. All right. Coming up next, I got a human take for you. We'll talk a little NBA and a Thanksgiving tip from the Leisureman. Stick around. NBC Sports Radio.
All right. We're the Leisureman, Andrew Perloff and Paul Papps. A lot of NFL today, a little NBA. We're going to talk a little later about Jimmy Butler hitting a game winner for my Philadelphia 76ers. But Paul, first, staying on Philadelphia. Philadelphia Eagles came into today. They were 10-point dogs to the Saints, which kind of surprised me. I thought that was a big line. And then the game opened, and man, that line wasn't big enough. The Saints just blew the doors off the Eagles. Drew Brees looked perfect. What are your thoughts on the New Orleans Saints?
You know, I've watched almost all the Saints this year, and this is not a big surprise at all. I'm to the point right now with the way Drew Brees is playing. He kind of reminds me of Steph Curry 3 years ago when he had his MVP year where it looked like he was in a zone from wire to wire. Drew Brees had not even his best game of the season. He was 22 for 30, 363, and four touchdowns. Now, throw in the fact that the running backs combined for 35 carries for 177, 5.1 yards a carry. They've got receivers besides Michael Thomas. Tre'Quan Smith, who most people don't know, had 10 catches. Kamara's unstoppable out of the backfield. They're having fun out there. They're using Taysom Hill as this trick play guy. They're really kind of having fun this year. And Drew Brees reminds me of an athlete, like when a running back runs for 2,000 yards or a quarterback throws for 5,000, he's just making it look easy and he's had no bad games. My human take is I would take a bet. Like I put 500 up. If someone else took the field, I would take the Saints to win the Super Bowl as of right now.
Oh, yeah, I'll do that.
Would you take the field or you take the Saints?
Oh, I'd take the field.
Why? Who's the biggest threat?
I'm just playing the numbers. I like field bets. I agree with you. They're probably the favorite. The threats are the Rams. That's the big one. They'll have two hard games. They'll have the Rams, and then they'll have the AFC winner. So even if they're the favorite, Paul, that's a tall, tall task.
Yeah, I think they would have two really tough games because I think the Rams' defense will not stop their running game when Mark Ingram and Kamara get going.
Yeah.
And if the same thing goes with the defense of the Chiefs, I don't think they could stop their running game either. Now, the Saints' defense is not great at all. They're good. They don't have a lot of stars on their team, but they're giving Drew Brees every opportunity. And Drew Brees controls the ball, and he milks the clock a lot.
You know, I think their defense, the same thing happened last year. They started off really bad. They got lit up by the Bucs at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good now. And they do have, you know, they have some guys. Their rookie, Marcus Davenport, the pass rusher, is really good. Obviously, Cam Jordan, the pass rusher, is really good. Their cornerbacks, at times, are really good. Obviously, they have the kid, Marcus Williams, who messed up in the Minneapolis Miracle. He's a really good player. And Marshawn Lattimore. So I think their defense is pretty good. Now, let's look at their schedule, though, real quick. They have the Falcons. That's always tough. It's a divisional game. At Cowboys, that might be a tricky one. They got at Bucks, at Panthers, Steelers at home, and Panthers at home. So can they keep the Rams off them for home field, Paul? That's the big question.
Hey, here's something for you on Drew Brees. Drew Brees right now, his quarterback rating for the season is 123.8. If he holds that or makes it any better, it'll be the best quarterback rating in a single season in NFL history. The second best, as of right now, the best of all time, 2011 Aaron Rodgers. He was a 68% passer, 4,600 yards, 45 touchdowns, and only six picks. Then you got to go to Peyton Manning. Guess who, and you're going to know this, is the anomaly one, the fourth best quarterback rating in a season all time.
I have no idea. I would have said like Kurt Warner. I'm not sure. Why would I know?
Nick Foles. Nick Foles.
Oh, the 2017.
In 2013. Yeah. Now, he didn't play an entire season, but he threw for 3,000 yards, 27 touchdowns, and two picks in that Chip Kelly offense. By the way, Mahomes this year is going to have the fifth best all time.
Yeah.
And then there's other guys. Jared Goff is going to be the 12th best all time. So what you have been saying about all quarterbacks are succeeding this year, it's true. There are seven different quarterbacks this year, they're as of right now, they're going to enter the top 20 of quarterback rating all time.
Wow. That is amazing.
Choke also, on that stat, SportsCenter.
Okay, yards per game, by the way. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's six over 300 yards per game. So that's that. Just so you know where that is, that's at 4,800. So you could have possibly 5,000-yard seasons this year. That is
right,
unbelievable.
And wait till you see like the completion rankings, like the most completions.
Oh, it's ridiculous now.
Passing completion percentage, the best of all time, Drew Brees is going to get that as well based on, you know, you got to have at least, I think, 300 attempts. Drew Brees is going to have the first. A couple years ago, Sam Bradford had it. But guys, this year, they're going to have the best completion percentages in NFL history, top 10. Brees, Cousins, Derek Carr, who's on a struggling team, is going to finish with the fourth best completion percentage in NFL history this year.
I know. It's unending how many fun games you can have with these numbers. How many 4,000-yard pass? Is 4,000 yards a good number?
4,000 yards is now, if you start 16 games, you should throw for 4,000 yards. We're at that point.
So, okay, I'm doing the math. Here, vamp for a little bit. I'm going to get this in 1 second. 4,000 yards, I'll bet you we have 20. Take a guess.
At least 15 guys will throw for 4,000 yards.
Okay, 4,000 yards. I have about, it to get 4,000 yards, I think it's closer to 24.
So that means you stink if you throw for less than 3,500 yards.
Yo, there's something wrong with you. Throw for either you got benched or you were injured. I mean, how do you throw for less than 3,500 yards? Man,
it
you
really,
go, there, yeah. There was
what
a
do
year
you think
where
is
Joe
the drastic
Ferguson
move? What do you think this year is the drastic move that made, or is a culmination of the past year's rule changes with defensive backs not being able to manhandle? Quarterbacks now really don't have to worry as much about getting cracked in the pocket. To me, that's it. That quarterbacks can shuffle in the pocket and move, and unless they are just, you know, they're not going to get crushed, and they have to be emboldened by the fact that they're not going to get hit like they used to.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big part of it. I think the spread offense coming up from college and all the young coaches having a big impact. I think gloves are part of it. Real quick, in 1977, Joe Ferguson led the league with 2,800 yards passing, through 12 touchdowns and 24 picks that year for the Buffalo Bills. There you go.
Sunday night on NBC Sports Radio, Paulie Papps, Andrew Perloff. We are the Leisureman. Follow us on Twitter at the Leisureman and send in your thoughts. We're going to get to them in a little bit. Perloff, I put out a tweet earlier. The Leisureman Couch, we're going to help you fix your life in under 11 minutes. And I put a guarantee on there because nobody guarantees anything more. If we can't fix your life in 11 minutes, we'll give you those 11 minutes back in every single one of them. What do you think?
I like it. Now, our advice, and we sometimes learn from our mistakes, Paul. We're big enough men. We can admit taking the red eye on Friday night from L.A. to New York was a huge mistake. You know, but that's what we're here for. You can learn from our folly.
Yeah, we screw up. You do better. All right, let's get to the NBA. You're a Philadelphia 76ers fan. How pumped were you when they acquired Jimmy Butler? How high can this team go with that new triumvirate there?
Ooh. Okay, it's complicated. I was not a Butler guy. I thought that he was a little selfish, a little me first. There's only one kind of player that wins in today's NBA. That's a Golden State Warriors kind of player. Team first, can shoot the three. Butler is shot. He's a little inconsistent from three. Doesn't seem team first. But now that he's on my team, he's awesome. The dude can defend, Paul. Then he had a big three the other night to beat the Hornets. I'm in now. I think he's a better fit on the Sixers than he was the T-Wolves.
You know, I think it's a great pickup for them. They didn't give up a ton. They didn't give up any first-round draft choices. They gave up Dario Saric, who is a nice big forward, small forward guy. But they have that position covered. What I think is much, much, much more important is Joel Embiid. Embiid is becoming... he's on his way to being a top five NBA player and the best big man in the game next to maybe Anthony Davis in the next year. 33 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, 2 blocks. He's got range. He's got moves. He's entertaining. He is a superstar in every sense of the word. And again, if he stays healthy, right now he's averaging 28-13 and 2.5 blocks. That's hard to deal with. I know it's a 3-point shooting league. That said, if you could slow down a series against the Celtics, you can beat them. And if you can get a break or two or three or four against the Warriors, you got a chance. The problem is your team, your Sixers, don't shoot a lot of threes with their stars. Yeah. Their backups do all their three-point shooting.
Yeah. I mean, J.J. Redick's always on the court in the fourth quarter. He's a good three-point shooter. I don't know that you can slow it down against the Celtics. I feel like Brad Stevens will figure that out. I mean,
yeah.
I agree with you to a large extent. Embiid's a superstar. Top five, I can even go there. I'm not sure. I put Giannis right there. If I gave you Giannis, Anthony Davis, and Joel Embiid, I think I might go Giannis.
I feel like
the upside's bigger.
Yeah, and the injury issues are less.
Yeah.
We've seen all Anthony Davis's cards, and he's just awesome. And
yeah.
Joel Embiid is right there, maybe a tick less. Giannis is expanding his game by the game.
His new coach, Mike Budenholzer, is trying to make him shoot from three. It's interesting. I take all three. I think the Sixers did get a lot more interesting. I think they're a real threat in the East, which looks unpredictable now. You know, the Raptors, the Celtics have been struggling, and the Raptors had them. They were up 10, I think, in the second half on Friday night, and they totally blew the lead because the Celtics, once they hit their stride, know how to win.
We haven't been on the air since the Draymond Green little tiff with Kevin Durant happened. Draymond Green fought for the rebound and basically took it out of Kevin Durant's hands, which is fine. But Durant's like calling for the ball. Draymond Green loses it, costs them the game. They got into it in the huddle and they had to be separated. The funny thing is Boogie Cousins is playing the peacemaker, keeping them separate. What was the surprise was when they suspended Draymond Green a game and everyone read into it like, well, that's the management of the Golden State Warriors saying, hey, we're a Kevin Durant team first, not a Draymond Green team, and we're going to give him a public punishment that's a public backing of Kevin Durant to get him to stay there for the next few years. That had nothing to do, well, it had something to do with that incident, but more so about the next 5 years of this franchise.
Absolutely. And I don't agree necessarily with Charles Barkley, who said that the Warriors will never win without Durant. I think if they went back to that team they had, they'd be right in the mix. But I get it. You know, they're moving to a downtown stadium. It's important to have Durant for obvious reasons. I used to be kind of a bigger Draymond fan. Is he losing a step or something, or do they need him less? I feel like he's not winning games like he used to win games.
He's not as vital anymore because, remember, he came out of college he was the focal point of Michigan State's offense. And when he got there, he took a lot more shots. He doesn't shoot the ball very much anymore. He's more of a rebound, defense, passing guy. He leads the team in assists, and he is swallowing his pride as an offensive player to let the three big guns get theirs. And it's working because they're just rolling. He's going to pick up another ring, and he's going to get a monster contract. But I think Draymond Green is probably underrated because you need those guys who can bang and are intimidators and aren't afraid to get dirty with the other team, sometimes he overdoes it, but most of the time he's in the right. What I think the thing that is with that team is, though, Kevin Durant lets you have an injury to Steph Curry or an injury to Klay Thompson and still roll to a title. Now, if you remove Durant, then you can't afford to have either of those other two guys get hurt, because then they can be doubled and triple teamed. So they can find another banger to play defense. They can't find another top five shooter in the world.
That's absolutely true. But they're all about teamwork and moving the ball. So you'd like to say that they can, their system, and I'm a big system guy, can overcome that. By the way, one thing about Draymond, his stats are way down this year. He's averaged about 11, 10, 14.
Look at his assists, though. Look at his
6.9.
Assists.
But his assists are 7.2, which are where they've always been. He's always had a 7 assists a game. So something's wrong there. He's only shooting 20% from three. You know, he maybe is just cold, but there's something. He's only 29 or 28. He shouldn't be having a downside. But I don't know. He looks a little older. It doesn't make any sense, I know. But I think it's a chemistry. You know, you're right. I think he's acquiescing too much and he wants his.
Yeah, I think he's also got in a position where he must think to himself, every time I shoot, the rest of the people are looking at me going, why are you shooting and not getting into those other three guys?
Absolutely. Also, obviously, the Warriors, I saw that game. I was at that game with the Clippers. Curry is everything. Without Curry, they're just another team. They're basically they're the Oklahoma City Thunder without Curry. I don't think they would win the title.
You said before you thought Michael Jordan is underrated. I think Steph Curry is drastically underrated because he still is a little bit smaller, so he doesn't have the physicality. I think people think Steph Curry isn't as great as he is because he's not as physically intimidating and impressive as guys like Kevin Durant or LeBron James. Like when you see Steph Curry in person, you're like, oh, he's 6'3". I have a lot of buddies who are 6'3". He's got the baby face, but it doesn't matter because the ball goes in the basket the same way, and he does it more creatively than anybody in NBA history. I'd say the only other guy that reminds me of him, and it's weird, is Larry Bird, where he had every single shot and created them on the fly. And I think this guy's going to go down underrated.
Yeah, I totally buy that. I think I would argue that he's more valuable than LeBron and Durant. That's
right now he is.
I used to say that like 2 years ago, and people look at me like you're out of your mind because everyone thinks LeBron and Durant are the best players. They're probably the best players, but the value, he stretches the court to 50 feet or whatever, to 10 feet beyond the three-point line. That's LeBron doesn't do that. Like LeBron is a problem, but Curry opens up everything. And I agree, Bird's a great analogy. Bird's, I'm not going to say he's there, by the way. That's hard for me to do. As a Sixers fan who was tortured by Larry Bird, I'm not sure I could go right there.
Well, if you look at, Steph Curry's 30 years old now. His career is, most of it is in the books. And he got a little bit of a late start. He didn't really get to become Steph Curry until he's 24 years old. Age 21, 22, and 23, he averaged about 17 points a game. It was really good. Right now, he is averaging 29.5 points per game, which is tough to do on that team because there's a lot of guys shooting. He's up to 51% from the field, the best of his career. He is now shooting 49. He's almost at 50% from three, and it's coming. There's no surprise in his game anymore, and his shooting percentage is going up. It's really nuts that the guy is plateauing without going down at age 30, and you think of these guys who run and move that they're going to slow down, and he will. At 34, he won't be himself, but right now he's at his peak.
Absolutely, and he's obviously, we all know he's had a huge impact on the game because without him, there's no Trae Young. That kind of thing. The court, scoring is way up this year. I think that's a Curry effect. Everybody is shooting a three, and they're taking from way downtown, and it works. You know who had a big one the other day? A rookie, Luka Doncic. He comes to the NBA. He's 6'8". Of course, he can hit the three. Everyone can hit the three now. I don't know if that's Curry, but I think it's the whole team of the Warriors showed you that don't be afraid of putting up 40 threes a game because it can work.
Oh. I think it totally is Curry. The Steph Curry effect is now 4 years deep because if you look, 4 years ago is when he had his breakout season where he was the single most entertaining person in all of sports, no matter what the sport was. I can remember me and you going down to the city when the Warriors were on that run when we were at the Dan Patrick Show, and we'd find a bar to watch a Warriors regular season game. How many people that would you search out to where that's not your team, it's just a team you want to watch, where I got to watch this? It's like Patrick Mahomes this year. That was Steph Curry 4 years ago, but even better.
Yeah, I'll give you. There's only one this year, and he plays college, and his name is Zion Williamson. That's the only guy.
Sure.
That's bar worthy. But in the NBA, I wouldn't even go for Curry now because we've seen. You're right. The newness of it was amazing right back then.
Zion Williamson is that guy because we were on the flight to LA the other day, and I was on DirecTV, JetBlue, which has DirecTV. My flight landed at 1:30 Eastern, and I remember to myself, don't forget to turn on ESPN2 because. I think it's Duke versus Army basketball, and I wanted to watch the first half hour. I had that written down in my notes for what to do that day, is turn on Army versus Duke. That's the Zion Williamson effect.
Yeah, oh, and you throw out the record books, Coach K's former team. Man, that's wild. By the way, they're showing – sorry, I got distracted. They're showing the Steelers-Jaguars on NBC right now, the highlights.
Mm.
Explain to me how Pittsburgh left that stadium with a win, Paul. It is one of the weirdest things. I mean, we could chop it up, and we did chop it up, and you summarized the whole game. They lost that game three times. I saw it with my own eyes.
You got to give Ben credit. If you watch that last play where it was supposed to be a shovel pass to the tight end, and there was just
– yeah,
he was like caught up in the wash, and Ben realized if I throw this, it's probably going to be incomplete or worse, and he could afford it. But he also knew that he had a timeout left, so if he goes for the end zone and doesn't make it, they can call timeout with 6 or 7 seconds left. And throw the ball or run the ball in the next play. So I thought that was a great play by Ben. All right, coming up next, little Thanksgiving treats for the Leisureman and the Leisureman couch. Your advice to you from two guys who know how to help other people out. That's what we love to do. Stick around, Leisureman, NBC Sports Radio.
Welcome back to Leisureman. I'm Andrew Perloff. He is Paul Papps. If you're watching Football Night in America on NBC, you're seeing Khalil Mack donning the orange jersey for the Bears. Huge game, Bears-Vikings.
You notice
coming
something
up
there?
Yeah, that's awesome. Coming back a little, you know, it's funny, by the way. We're about to talk about Thanksgiving. The Bears play again on Thanksgiving, visit Detroit. Seems like a quick turnaround to do in the night game, but Khalil Mack can do it. Speaking of which, Paulie, let's talk a little Thanksgiving. Give me in a nutshell your plans.
Well, it's pretty typical. Watch football, eat all day. But one of the things I think people focus on too much at Thanksgiving is the dinner itself and don't remember to have a string of food throughout the morning and afternoon leading up to it because it really doesn't matter how much Thanksgiving dinner you eat because you're going to eat a lot of it the next day. So oftentimes growing up, my mom would be there working on Thanksgiving dinner and there'd be nothing else. Now, I could have got off my lazy ass and done something, but as an adult, I'm aware of this. So I like to have an interesting breakfast. Not a full lunch, but a smattering of appetizers that you could have throughout the day leading up to that early, late afternoon, maybe evening dinner. You know what I'm saying, Perloff? Sometimes I think people get all their focus on one thing. You got to be your head on a swivel.
Boy,
I get nervous.
It's not a competition. Like, it's just supposed to be fun. You know,
you know what I'm talking about. You eat more than anybody I know. You're more focused on food than me. Like if you, let's say you came to my house and you decided to get there early and I said, hey, yeah, we got nothing to eat right now, but around 4 o'clock, we're going to go nuts. And it's like 11:30 in the morning and the Bears are about to come on versus the Lions. What are you doing? Put some food out, get a little something going.
Hey, I have a question. Do you have a outline, a rundown for your Thanksgiving day? I feel like sometimes a producer, Paulie, comes out around events like this where like you have, now does anybody get mad at if the kids get off the schedule, I feel like you're like, it has to go this way. We're going to trim the tree here. We're going to eat this here. We're going to eat that there because you're very methodical of it, especially when it comes to food, beer, stuff like that, things you care about.
Yes, I do. My single biggest pet peeve is when people are meandering around when dinner is ready. I love hot food, and especially I'm going to be working on the food, and so will my wife and the other people that are there that aren't working on the food. All right, dinner's ready, and they're like taking their time. Now, I know there's football on. I love football as much as the next guy, but it's time to go eat, and hot food is the best, warm to hot food. And when people meander about or serve food that's cold, the other thing, let's say you don't time it out right. Let's say you make stuffing and you got to put some tin foil over it. Run it back in the microwave for 30 seconds just to top off the warmth. And so you put it on the table pretty warm.
Now, I can't agree with you more on the hot food thing, especially if you're the chef, especially if it's just you and one other person. Let's say your wife. I'm not going to specifically talk about the situation.
Here it comes.
You know, I make my famous steak fajitas. They're not going to be as good if you go upstairs and shower for 20 minutes and come out and eat them. You know what I'm saying, Paul?
I do, but I mean it's a slap in the face to the chef and all the and the food itself. Let's get to the table at a prompt hour, eat like madmen, and then run and go back to watch football, and then you could eat again an hour later.
Absolutely, but also I get seriously affected by tryptophan, so I'll be I am famous for falling asleep at the Thanksgiving dinner table, and I plan to do it this year, and that's a sign of a good thing. Any Leisureman couch coming, Paul? What do we got?
Yeah, a couple questions. One guy asked, how do I deal with family on a football Sunday when I want to watch all the games? Which is, that's as big of a question as can be asked of the Leisureman. This guy was named Trevor, and I don't know where he's from. Look, we've said this before. Try to get all your errands, family-related, house-related, yard-related, done early on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Get up mm-hmm. early. You know, unless you're watching Premier League soccer, which a lot of people do, but let's say you're not a fan. Get up at 7:30 in the morning. Do all your stuff you need to do. You know, whatever you got to do. And you know, even maybe do Friday night date night. Friday night date night with the wife is important. Saturday, getting all your stuff done around the house and errands. Then you set yourself up for 20 hours of football on Saturday and Sunday. That's it. It's as quick as I can make it, Perloff.
Yeah, I mean, you've been preaching this for years,
yep.
And if you don't want to listen to you, Paul, it's your fault.
That's on you.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, my key for watching enough football on Thanksgiving, I usually skip parts of the Lions games. That is not, you know, that is not a must watch. Am I wrong? Is that mean?
It's nice that the Lions won this week, and the Bears, if they could win this week or even lose this week, they're going to need that game. So, yeah, the Lions the past few years have been a little tough to watch.
And then we got any chance at Alabama? Auburn gives Alabama a hard time in the Iron Bowl?
Man, it would be something. It would make Auburn's year because they have been well down this year, and they've really cooled off as a program.
Yeah, that game is Saturday, 3:30 p.m., but I feel like you throw out the record books a little bit. Remember what's the nickname for that play where he ran down the sideline at the end? The kick six?
The kick six, the return, the gut-wrenching heart-pulling of the Alabama fans.
It'd be fun to have that kind of drama.
It sure would. Hey, thanks a lot for listening to the Leisureman Radio Show. Don't forget the midweek podcast. We'll have it out before Thanksgiving,
up,
right here on NBC Sports Radio.